Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in to the early line. We've got Juicy Day, folks. It's a Tuesday morning here on Sports Grid. I'm Kevin Walsh, joined by Donnie Wrightside. How are you feeling, DRS?
Yeah, feeling good. I mean, if you were an over-backer last night, seeing 3 total points scored in that second half, probably not feeling so good. But week one in the NFL, it is time to overreact. And I'm sure, Kevin, we're going to overreact on that game that was played last night in Seattle.
We'll debate if it's an overreaction or if it's justified, but there's certainly a lot to discuss. As Russell Wilson's return to Seattle is spoiled by the Seahawks and Geno Smith, 17-16, the Seattle Seahawks win outright as a 6.5-point favorite. They were shut out in the second half. To your point about the total, the second half actually only featured 3 points scored. It featured just as many turnovers in that second half. A stunning game to watch all in all. Russell Wilson threw for 340 yards, 1 touchdown, no interception, but some would say outdueled by Geno Smith as he threw for 195 yards, but was 23 of 28 with 2 touchdowns and no interceptions.
Did enough here is what Geno Smith did, and sometimes just capitalize on the turnovers here for what the Denver Broncos had. But I was asked for months and months and months for my opinion on this game, and I thought it was a surefire blowout. So if you were out there with a suicide pool and you're looking at this game, I feel for you today because the Denver Broncos should have won easy, but that's why they play the games, Kevin. 17-16 final, that stings.
There were a lot of aspects of this game for the Denver Broncos that were hard to believe, but nothing perhaps more confusing than on a 4th and 5 with 1 minute left, wasting the entire clock and then sending their kicker, Brandon McManus, out there to try and hit the 2nd longest field goal in NFL history of 64 yards instead of asking Russell Wilson to pick up 5 yards. Again, there is a lot to get to with that game. Also, quick note, Jamal Adams looks like he has a very serious injury that will keep him out for some time. We're going to get to a lot of injury updates, but the first update we get to involves Jimmy Garoppolo, Dak Prescott, and the quarterback questions that we have right now. And boy, oh boy, did Kyle Shanahan deliver a phenomenal answer when asked if he would be willing to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. We're willing to trade anybody. Listen, in this business, you take a phone call on any player. Hey, you'll listen on coaches even. What a load of nonsense. Just say yes. Clearly, Donnie, they are willing to trade Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we're looking to get Debo's. Yeah, he's not going anywhere. We told you that in the offseason. We're not trading this guy. Okay, so you're not listening to him. How about, hey, Bosa, we need a pass rusher. How about Bosa? Hey, we're not trading Bosa here, but how about Jimmy? Of course, we listen to everybody here. Jimmy Garoppolo's up. They should trade him. He shouldn't be on the team by the time they practice on Wednesday, Kevin.
I would like to know what happens if someone called John Lynch and asks for Kyle Shanahan. I mean, apparently the coaches in San Fran are on the trading block there. We got an update just this morning, a fresh, brand new timeline on Dak Prescott. We will get you that in just a little bit and give you an idea where things stand with Dak Prescott. In other injury news, though, as we were discussing, TJ Watt looks like he will avoid surgery on his torn pec injury and could be back within, you know, a little more than a month or so, back end of October. To be honest with you, the radio audience is in the fold. That's what I got to be honest about. We love the radio audience here, Sirius XM, Channel 159. They kept saying that TJ Watt was going for second opinions and third opinions and fourth opinions. I'm a little worried that TJ Watt just kept asking around until some doctor told him you don't need surgery, when he probably does.
Exactly, and that's what it sounds like here. And by the way, if this was J.J. Watt, you would have had a picture on Instagram of him bench pressing 350 last night and doing push-ups, saying, I'm going to be back sooner than later with my brothers. But this was a devastating injury. Also, when you think about it, Kevin, it's not as if you just sit out 6 weeks and get back on the field. Can he do any strength training with a torn pectoral muscle? And what's that going to look like when he comes back? Is he playing with one arm the rest of the season? Devastating news for a guy that probably had a legitimate chance to repeat as Defensive Player of the Year.
Absolutely. Was off to a phenomenal start in the Steelers' win against the Cincinnati Bengals. How about some other injury news here, Donnie? Chris Godwin is going to be able to avoid major injury after leaving early against the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. Not as fortunate for the Eagles' defensive end, Derek Barnett. His season is over with a torn ACL.
Quick thoughts on that Godwin injury, Kevin. Is this a blessing in disguise for Godwin and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he didn't re-injure his knee? Therefore, he's probably going to miss a few weeks to help strengthening up that knee as well. Maybe this was a godsend for him down there, for Chris Godwin. How about that?
I see what you're saying. In college football news, Notre Dame quarterback Tyler Buchner is going to be out likely for the remainder of the season, at least 4 months. Also, he was playing some horrific football, so very well Buchner might have been benched anyway, but it's going to be Drew Pine for Notre Dame the rest of the way.
Yeah, let's see what Notre Dame has here. And also for a coach that started out his career 0-3, Marcus Freeman, you can only go up from here, I guess.
Well, you could fall to 0-4, I guess. We can't rule it out, as they're now going on to a backup quarterback for an offense that has been sputtering. In Major League Baseball news, Mike Trout.
MVP.
Mike Trout is top. MVP. He's top five in home runs in Major League Baseball. Seven straight games with a homer. How are the Angels real, Donnie?
Yeah, it would be seven straight games without a homer if the they actually needed those games to win out there for the Angels. So congrats, Mike Trout.
Oh, my goodness, man. We're talking Monday Night Football, man.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome back in to the early line. We're taking a look at Monday Night Football. And this really was a marvelous, marvelous game to watch play out. 17-16, the final score of the Seattle Seahawks' direction. You know, Donnie said it's week one, right? We overreact. Am I overreacting if I believe that Nathaniel Hackett should be fired after his first game as the head coach of the Denver Broncos?
Now, I don't think you're overreacting, but let's also bring up one of those topics that we joked about, right? Where did Nathaniel Hackett come from? Came from Green Bay. Nathaniel Hackett went over to Denver because we were led to believe that he was the ace in the hole. You hire me, Aaron Rodgers is coming. Only to figure out that Aaron Rodgers is like, man, I know what you're getting out there in Denver. I don't want anything to do with that. So jokes aside, not a good look for one of those guys that's supposed to be extremely smart and be able to handle operations. And also, it's the greater picture, Kevin. These coaches get millions and millions of millions of dollars, and you can sit on your couch at home and go, that's the wrong thing right there. Why did he call a timeout there? I wouldn't be kicking this field goal. I would be going for it. Why can we all see this sitting on our couch, but the guy on the 50-yard line who's paid to make the decisions continuously gets these wrong?
So the thing is, as that game came to a conclusion, I said that he should be fired, and it was not an overreaction. A lot of people say, whoa, overreaction city. It's this guy's first game. What do you want? You know who made their debuts this week? Kevin O'Connell, win and cover. Brian Daboll, win and cover. Mike McDaniel against the greatest coach of all time for a lot of people, win and cover. Hackett's the only one who lost and did not cover in terms of coaches making their head coach debut. Also, the reality is every single big decision made by Nathaniel Hackett was the wrong decision. Now, we don't have to get into calling run plays on 2nd and 15 routinely, because sometimes you want to try and mix it up, even though that isn't a great look. The offense hummed. It certainly did, right? At the end of the day, the only teams that averaged more yards per play than Denver this week were the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. The Chiefs scored 44 in a win. The Bills scored 31 in a victory. And Seattle ultimately held Denver to 16 points somehow in their win, despite giving up 6.8 yards per play. And let's get to the decision-making. It's 4th and 1. You need a touchdown, and you bring Russell Wilson in to hand it off to Melvin Gordon. You have to be kidding me. This is not, Melvin Gordon isn't even supposed to be your lead running back. It's supposed to be Javonte Williams. Put the ball in Russ's hand. He'll find the end zone. So after your defense, though, bounces back because we get a fumble from Melvin Gordon, your defense gets you the ball back. And all of a sudden, what do? On a 3rd and 1, you learned your lesson. Don't give it to Melvin Gordon. That's not the lesson. You give the ball to Russell Wilson. Instead, you hand it off to Javonte Williams. He fumbles. Your defense steps up again. You march right down the field again. 4th and goal on the 8-yard line. I'm not sure if Russ is going to be able to get 8 yards. Let's kick 3. So you're still losing the football game, but you're trusting your defense. And again, they step up, Donnie. And it's 4th and 5 with a minute left on the clock. And somehow they drain all 40 seconds and send Brandon McManus out at midfield to kick a 64-yard field goal instead of trusting Russell Wilson to pick up 5 yards. Hackett's so embarrassed, he's calling timeouts as Geno Smith is taking kneel downs with 20 seconds left remaining. Every single big decision made by Nathaniel Hackett was the wrong decision. They should have ran Seattle off the field, and instead they're off to an 0-1 start.
Yeah, but Kevin, the signal at the end of the game is what matters most, right? The timeouts that he used when Geno Smith is taking a knee. Hey, guys, we're going to play this right out to the end to give ourselves an opportunity. That's the tone you want to set. Now, I am kidding a little bit by that, but come on now. When you're in those high price paying environments where you're the coaching staff and you say to yourself, I'm one of the best quarterbacks in football, it's 4th and 5. What are they? Maybe they thought they weren't even in Denver, Kevin, with the high air, but got to tell you, that kick went off and actually looked like it was good for a long way and certainly would have been good from probably 68, 70 yards at that point. But you got to be on target. You're not supposed to make that field goal. You're not supposed to line up for anything over 60 yards and say, you know what? I got a great feeling that this is going in 75% of the time. That's not going to happen. But the issue was, if you have timeouts and a minute left on the clock in 4th and 5, why not call one right there? Like, was the thought process, if we don't get this, maybe we'll have some time to get the football? It doesn't even make sense because it can't happen with that little time left. If you call a timeout with, let's just say, 50 seconds to go, talk it over, still have a timeout left, you convert the first down, you can call another timeout, but plenty of time to run up if you want to spike it and run extra plays and give your kicker a legitimate chance from 40 yards, 45 yards, or even 50 yards. Your kicker does have a big leg, but seeing guys struggle in those environments, and also, we talked about this ad nauseum even yesterday. Russ is going back to Denver and playing with them because why? They're going to let him cook. Nathaniel Hackett came from a passing offense in Green Bay. We laughed at what Russell Wilson had to do in Seattle. Hand the football off, hand the football off. Every time this guy tries to throw, 29 of 42, 340 yards and a touchdown if you let him throw. And here we are handing the football from the goal line. How about on that 1 4th down play where he had the fumble on the goal line? What happens if he sneaks that ball in the chest, pulls it back out and dumps it off to a tight end, probably wide open, or else he just runs a naked bootleg and walks into the end zone? Sometimes it feels so easy at home for this to happen, and it doesn't convert in real time. 17-16 loss when theoretically, Kevin, they almost doubled them up in yardage. They should have won this game 34-17, and instead they lost.
The reality is some people feel like firing Hackett would be a massive overreaction. I understand where you're coming from. It's not really common to fire a coach after one game. So here's what I do if I'm in charge of Denver. We sit him down and we ask him 3 very important questions. Do you know who Russell Wilson is? You then follow that up by asking, do you know how much we paid Russell Wilson? And the most important question, will you trust Russell Wilson moving forward? And you need yeses across the board. How Russell Wilson is known by everybody that follows the NFL to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Everybody knows it, except for whoever is coaching him. Why does nobody trust him? Does Russ secretly not want the ball? I refuse to believe such a thing. There is no way that Russell Wilson is actively telling them, please, I am begging you, hand it off to Melvin Gordon. In a revenge spot, I am begging you, please let me give it to Javonte Williams. With the game on the line, I am begging you to let Brandon McManus kick a 64-yard field goal. There is no way that is what Russell Wilson wants. The Denver Broncos, at the end of the day, Donnie, again, the third best yards per play of any offense in the NFL this week and a second half shutout. You know, as far as me predicting that this team can go to the Super Bowl, the talent is very visibly there. They cannot have this level of decision-making, though, cost this team. You're in the NFC West. You can't lose games like this. You can't lose games like this. And next week, they're going to go and play the Houston Texans in a home opener. Listen, maybe I'm overreacting. You can tell me I am. They're 0-2. Hackett doesn't make it on the bus. They're home, so I guess there's no bus, but you get my point. But if they lose to the Texans next week, I have no idea how he coaches a third game.
He will coach a third game, even if they lose next week. But they're not losing next week, because if you just hold on to the football, you would have won this game going away and everything would have been happy. You know, lollipops and rainbows back in Denver on our way to the Super Bowl. You're going to have some adversity, and I love it, because week one is supposed to be about the overreaction. You coach one game, you stink, get out of here. I don't want to see you again. 17-16 loss. I get it here. Or what happens if Denver would have won this game 41-17? Nathaniel Hackett, coach of the year. Can't believe this. What a great move for Russ. Everybody's letting Russ go. It happens here. So week two, we'll get those over adjustments here. But I'm not going to say now, oh my goodness, I saw the Denver Broncos lose to the Seattle Seahawks. I don't think they can do anything. That's not the case. The Broncos played very good football. They just turned it over ridiculously on the goal line. They'll win more games than not, and they'll be a player here in the NFL, specifically in the AFC.
It was a historic level of fumbling since like 1987. No team fumbled on the 1 yard line twice. We'll give the Seahawks their credit next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're back right here on Sports Grid with the early line on Tuesday morning. And I do want to give the Seahawks at least a chance to give them some credit. They win this game 17-16. Geno Smith came out on fire. You have to give him credit for that. Rashad Penny broke a couple of runs. Some of them called back for holding. He and the Seattle offense did enough in the first half, but they were shut out in the second half. They were, again, largely torched, but they held up on the goal line by forcing fumbles. Where are you at on Seattle? Or do you come away from this game thinking they'll be a little bit better than you had anticipated?
It depends on what better as anticipated means. You know, they're between like 5 and 6 wins or maybe 7 wins. Even though I watched that game last night and they did beat the Denver Broncos, which I didn't think they would be able to beat. So typically you'd say, okay, maybe a little bit higher in Seattle, but I'm really not, because I saw a team yesterday that just hung on and said, hey, we're going to let this other team just drive down the field repeatedly and get lucky on some fumbles and some bad decision-making. Because as you said, in the second half, they didn't score. It's almost like they were just waiting around saying, well, as long as Denver doesn't score, we don't have to do all that much. Geno Smith isn't a big play quarterback here, 195 yards. And also, after that first half, he had said, wow, he's going to go toe-to-toe with Russ. Let me see what his final statistics end up as. Because I told you yesterday, 205.5, I believe, or 208.5 was his passing prop number. I said, I like that to the over. Looks like it was a stone-cold surefire lock, but they just went into a shell in the second half. Where was DK Metcalf? Where was Tyler Lockett? No, the running game didn't look all that explosive. But having said that, Denver does have a pretty good defense, and obviously their offense has some talent along with Russell Wilson. That's a nice win by the Seattle Seahawks, but quite frankly, Kevin, it doesn't move the needle at all. If this was 17-16 where Seattle was fumbling into their own end zone and said, boy, Seattle looked great. They could, you know, they probably could have won by 2 touchdowns in this game. I didn't get that vibe, so not much changing for me on the Seattle Seahawks.
My biggest takeaway is I would have thought that Drew Lock becoming the quarterback at some point for Seattle would have been inevitable. I do not feel that way anymore. Clearly, this team and this fan base does back Geno Smith. Now, I understand the environment added to that, going up against your old quarterback in Russell Wilson, and of course, being able to snag a victory in his hot start, all of that provides. But Geno does feel like the leader of this football team. We'll see how that holds when they do start to lose games. They're going to be in near double-digit underdog in their next game going to San Francisco. I understand they're going to still have to play the game. We'll see how that holds. But it is interesting to think that less than a month ago, it felt like Drew Lock was on his way to taking this job away from Geno Smith, and Geno now really does feel entrenched as the starting quarterback here for the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks' next game is going to go up against the San Francisco 49ers. The Niners feel like a very important team as we sit here now with the injury to Dak Prescott. Here is the latest update on Dak. A bit of a surprise to me, but some positive news if you're a Cowboys fan or backing them in the futures market. The most recent timeline provided by Tom Pelissero of NFL Network is 4 to 6 weeks on Dak. He said that the surgery was clean and the doctors are optimistic and Prescott is a fast healer. To be honest with you, that sounds a little silly to me that, he's going to heal fast and everything was phenomenal. 4 to 6, it sounds a little lofty, but nevertheless, this really starts to throw things into disarray for me now. Because if you're not going to lose Dak Prescott for 2 months, on one side, Donnie, people will argue you don't need to trade for a quarterback. Dak is going to be on his way. But those 4 to 6 games you play without Dak, if you lose all of them, well, it might not matter when Dak Prescott comes back. What do you think about the situation the Cowboys find themselves in right now?
Here's a couple different points on this whole thing, too, because I knew yesterday, Kevin, I talked to you about it, like the national media, they're in an uproar right now because the meal ticket is the Dallas Cowboys on all these networks. It's why they have 4 and 5 different reporters just cover the Dallas Cowboys. So if you say Dak Prescott, we think he might be out 8 weeks to 10 weeks. Oh, no, I'm not going to watch the Dallas Cowboys anymore or be interested. And get ready for this as well. In 4 to 6 weeks, when the Dallas Cowboys are 4 games back of the NFC East, whoever's in the lead, you will hear the rumblings going, I think the Dallas Cowboys can win this division. I'm going to tell you why. So keep that in your back pocket here. But this is a one-game referendum coming up on Cooper Rush. You're not going to make a deal for a quarterback on a Wednesday because Jerry Jones is going to come out and say, boy, everybody's got leverage on us. If I make a phone call out to San Francisco right now for Jimmy Garoppolo, they're going to tell me they want a number one pick for Jimmy Garoppolo because they know how devastating the season will turn out if I don't have a decent quarterback option until Dak Prescott returns. Cooper Rush is going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. They didn't play all that well. We're not expecting 5 turnovers or 6 turnovers from the Cincinnati Bengals coming into this weekend. So if we get a game where the Bengals go up against the Dallas Cowboys and smoke them, the Dallas Cowboys 1,000% that Monday will make a move for a quarterback at whatever the cost will be. But if they can get a decent performance out of Cooper Rush, they'll try to send their fan base and say, hey, you know what? We can hold it here. Maybe Dak comes back sooner than later. Maybe we can get a win or two here, and then Dak will come back, and we'll see if he can hit the gas pedal second part of that season. Keep an eye on that game this weekend because it's not fair to Cooper Rush that he has to actually go out and maybe beat the Cincinnati Bengals, but he has to have a way better appearance in that game than just handing the football off and game managing for him to stay that starting quarterback over the next month or so.
So the problem is, if they just let the Cincinnati game play out and ultimately they lose and they say, all right, you know what? We need to assess this quarterback situation. Even if Dak is going to be back by October 16th, week 6 at Philadelphia, we cannot afford to punt the following 3 games. But now we get into, how quickly could let's use Jimmy Garoppolo? How quickly does he learn the offense? Is he going to be ready to play? We've only given him a week of prep time. If you're the Cowboys, you are now 2 weeks away from your September 2016th week 3 game in New York, or in Jersey, really, against the New York Giants. If you want to change at the quarterback position, you have to do it now. There is no reason to wait around. Plus, the Niners want to trade Garoppolo. They wanted to trade him all offseason long. And I'm hopefully reading the situation correct, that they know they're better off trading him right now. Everybody out there thinks they have to keep Jimmy G so they can eventually bench Trey Lance. You're all wrong. You are all wrong. They traded enough to make sure that Trey Lance is their quarterback for at least two more seasons. That's what they have to do, whether you believe in Trey Lance or not. They need Trey Lance to be their quarterback for at least two more seasons, drafting him third overall and all of the draft capital that was used to move up and select him. So at the end of the day, Garoppolo's never going to be the guy, unless they want to just blow up all of their plans, which I don't think they do. To me, if I am Dallas, getting on the phone for Garoppolo, assuming the price is not ridiculous, I would not trade a first-round pick for Jimmy G. That has always been laughable. But assuming the price is not too much, DRS, I would get on the phone, bring Jimmy Garoppolo in. If he by chance feels up to speed and can play against Cincinnati, fantastic. And if not, he's playing week three against the New York Giants. And let's be honest here, with Garoppolo, they're probably favorites in that football game.
Time will tell on this, and a lot's going to be told in this upcoming game, because whether or not Cooper Rush plays well and Dallas gets smacked by Cincinnati, I'm not so sure how much of a favorite they might even be against the Giants at that point, because the Dallas Cowboys could be in free fall mode. But let's take a look real quick before we take that Cowboys angle if they should make the move for Jimmy Garoppolo. How about for the 49ers? Most people would have watched week one and said, there is no way, Kevin, you can trade Jimmy Garoppolo now. Trey Lance was atrocious in game one. Now more than ever, you need to keep him as your backup quarterback to try to salvage this season. I'm on the opposite end. Now is the exact time you want to trade, because if your quarterback has a bad performance week one, he's looking over his shoulder. You know what he's not going to be doing when Jimmy Garoppolo is traded to another football team? Look over his shoulder and can settle down and be the starter of your franchise. Now, I already looked at the weather forecast here for San Francisco, or should I say Santa Clara in California this weekend. 67 degrees, no rain in the forecast, going up against that weak Seattle defense. Trey Lance should put up numbers, but he should not have to go over his shoulder and say, man, I really thought I was going to put up numbers. I threw another two interceptions in the first half of this football game against Seattle. Now I don't even know if I'm the starter, and my head is all jumbled. You needed to trade Jimmy Garoppolo. You needed to cut Jimmy Garoppolo before the season even started to ensure that your starting quarterback is making the right decisions for himself and learning on the fly, not saying, oh no, it's third and six. I have an easy out route here that I can try to convert the chains, but I'm going to take a shot deep because I have to impress my coaches, my teammates, and also the fan base here to stay as a starting quarterback. Now, on the Dallas Cowboys side, you're right. If you're Jerry Jones, you're getting up there in age. You can't win without a quarterback in the NFL. And for the Dallas Cowboys to throw their season away in after week one, which is incredible. Now, also, from a betting handicapping perspective here, coming into the season, what did you expect from the Dallas Cowboys? Probably compete for the NFC East Championship, but I know everybody's low. We see those numbers down to like make the playoffs, division, and the win total sitting at 6.5. I don't know if there's a downgrade on that win total of 6.5 because I didn't expect them to win week one against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Did they have a shot to win? Sure, but it wasn't a sure thing. They weren't favored, Kevin, by 7 or 8 points. Going, ooh, that's a win they let get away here, so that's going to affect it. If you do trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, and even with Cincinnati, that was no surefire winner anyway to start the season. Garoppolo comes back in and plays week three here against the Giants, and off you go. Maybe even have a discount, Kevin, on that team total here for the Cowboys for the remainder of the season.
I understand the premise, because I think you would end up with a discount where the number would go, but I wouldn't be sure that they're all of a sudden going to win seven games. I'll add as well, this idea that he'll be back, Dak will be back against the Eagles is the optimistic side. After that Eagles game, they're two games away from hitting their bye. I still don't think we see Dak Prescott until post-bye week, which is November. Call Andy Dalton up and get him out of New Orleans then, if you're so worried about somebody knowing the system, since Dalton has been there before in Dallas. Starting Cooper Rush, though, feels like a bad decision. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Before we move on to some of the week one performances that caught our eye, I want to make one last point here on the Dallas Cowboys by giving you an idea of how their odds have shifted on the FanDuel Sportsbook. They now have the worst odds to win the NFC East. The Philadelphia Eagles are a -150 favorite. The Commanders +460. The Giants at 5-1. And then it is 6-1 on Dallas. The Cowboys to make the playoffs has ballooned to +250. This was -225 before this season began, and the win total is 6.5, which I know you referenced ultimately. It depends what they do with the quarterback position. Do you agree, though, with shifting Dallas back as the last team in the division right now, or does that feel like a little bit of an overreaction?
It doesn't feel like an overreaction, to be quite honest, because it should be, right, from being basically a favorite a week and a half ago now till dead last and by a long shot. That's because your quarterback is everything in the National Football League. And it's not as if you already have a Jimmy Garoppolo-type scenario behind him. Or even, take a look at this, the Philadelphia Eagles. Very good backup option in Gardner Minshew. If Minshew were to come in, now, Jalen Hurts obviously is the starter. There's more talent there. But it's not the sky is falling. We're going to turn into a 5-win football team. You figure you can each manage and be in those games. With Cooper Rush as your starting quarterback, hey, Donnie, winning there. Do you remember that Minnesota? Yeah, I remember the Minnesota game. I get it here. But let's see him over a period of 4 or 5, 6, or maybe 7 games to see if that can take place. Because if you look at the New York Giants, not saying they're a formidable opponent now, but that's a nice win in Tennessee, and maybe they're turning the corner. Washington could have lost that game, but they didn't. Their quarterback situation looks way better. It's basically about the quarterbacks. Now that you look at all 4 teams in the East, who has the worst quarterback situation right now? It's Dallas Cowboys.
The tough thing, though, I think, is that Cowboys' performance transitioned to, oh, no, Dak is injured. Before that is, oh, no, they're terrible. Or, oh, they looked awful. Truthfully, if Cooper Rush is their quarterback for any legitimate period of time, I think they're going to be the worst offense in the NFL. The offensive line is shaky. The wide receiver room right now is not as strong as it once was. And Cooper Rush would feel likely as the worst starting quarterback in the NFL. Things could be quite disastrous. Currently, they are a 6.5-point home underdog against the Cincinnati Bengals, though, if we know anything about 6.5-point home underdogs, Bears, Seahawks, it's that they went outright. So maybe Dallas has Cincinnati right where they want them. I want to talk about some of the best and worst performances of week number one, and I want to focus in on the 3 wide receivers that were a part of big trades, received big contracts, and made their debuts. Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, and Devontae Adams. All impressive. Tyreek, the only one that did not go over 100 yards, only finished with 94. Devontae Adams did find the end zone. The setup here between these 3 wide receivers is to be super important to their football teams, and that was on display in week number one. My question, though, Donnie, of this trio, who is the most impressive?
And to be honest, I'm probably going to have to go here with Devontae Adams. Now, hear me out on this, because I can't take cop out and say, well, it's a tie, right? Because if I look at 3 players here, Tyreek Hill, A.J. Brown, and Devontae Adams, I say to myself, all 3 are grand slam, home run, free agent / trades that these teams made to make their football teams better, and they did do that. But if I look at just what happened on Sunday in week one and have an overreaction, was Tyreek Hill really missed that week one from the Kansas City offense? No. I mean, they absolutely rolled. They could have scored, as we said, 60-plus points, and Patrick Mahomes could have tacked on another 2 touchdowns. Not saying they're not missing Tyreek, but in that game, it didn't appear so. Look at that Tennessee Titans offense, how sluggish it was over the weekend losing to the Giants. And then you flip it over to the other side and say to yourself, well, Devontae Adams left where? Green Bay. How did Green Bay look with their wide receivers, with Aaron Rodgers saying, like, hey, what do you want me to do? I mean, these guys are young. They're going to drop passes, and it is what it is. Hopefully they can snap out of this sooner than later. That's a disaster here. And for those teams to get helped out, where the Eagles were looking for a true number one, they found it in A.J. Brown. The Raiders looking for that true number one wide receiver to help out Carr, they found it here. But if I'm looking overall, Devontae Adams is just an absolute monster. I loved what A.J. Brown, don't get me wrong here, but in a game where I thought maybe the stakes were a little bit higher for the Raiders, and you say to yourself, all right, we lost that game, but I got a dog on the outside that's going to be there all season long, probably have to go with a slight nod to Devontae Adams here.
Look, Devontae's game was fantastic. 17 targets, no one targeted more in week number one, 10 catches, 141 yards, and did find the end zone. But for me, A.J. Brown, I want you to think about this, right? We always love to do this. What if I told you, right? And what if I told you that Devonta Smith finished the game against the Lions with no yards? The Eagles are in trouble. Did Gardner Minshew check into the game? Is Nick Sirianni fired? Everything is wrong. And what if I would have said, in fact, then Dallas Goedert only had 3 catches for 60 yards. What did they throw for 110 yards as a team? 155 yards to A.J. Brown. 10 catches on 13 targets. A.J. Brown is so Donnie, you have a better range of this on me. So yeah. You tell me, is A.J. Brown the best wide receiver the Eagles have had since Terrell Owens? Because it sure feels like it.
Yes, but I'm glad you brought that up because I do have a prowess here of playing, you know, multiple levels of high-grade wide receiver play. So if that's saying that and I'm just trying to analyze true wide receiver to dominant wide receiver, you would be correct here. Terrell Owens to A.J. Brown, that is correct.
It adds a new element to the Eagles, which is what I think is why it was so impressive to see it work. I know the Lions don't feel like a fantastic team. Trust me, I do understand that. But the fact of the matter is the Eagles ran 39 times for 216 yards. That's 5.5 per clip and 4 touchdowns. None of that is surprising. It's how fantastic they were as well through the air. But again, look at how much of that was A.J. Brown. It's no slight to the other three. I might as well then just give Tyreek his due. 8 for 94 on 12 targets. Did not find the end zone, but was very solid for Miami. While you're right, Kansas City is not at the moment going to miss him a ton. I think Miami will be very, very happy to have him in town. I want to talk then about some underwhelming performances. 3 quarterbacks that I think a lot of people right now are probably asking questions around. Trey Lance, Joe Burrow, and Matthew Stafford. All 3 lost. All 3 with turnovers feeling like a big part of the story in those defeats. Joe Burrow with 4 picks, Matthew Stafford with 3 picks, Trey Lance in the rain threw one as well. Who had the most concerning performance of this bunch?
It's pretty easy for me. If I take a look at, let's just go for all 3 combined. Matthew Stafford has played in the NFL a long time, multiple time Pro Bowler, throws for a ton of yards, and oh yeah, he won a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow has been in the league for basically a cup of coffee here and has already been to a Super Bowl and showed that he can play at a high level. Trey Lance has proven nothing and barely played football over the past 4 to 5 years, or at least at a high level. That's the worry I'm worried about. But also, if I'm taking a look here, you know what is nice though? Trey Lance is Kyle Shanahan. If you can't make it work with Kyle Shanahan as your signal caller, then maybe you're just not good enough and they missed this draft pick. It's still early in his career. They played in a monsoon. I get it. And there is a chance this weekend, Kevin, that if we're looking from a fantasy perspective or when to get down on Trey Lance, it's probably this week. Well, we might run for close to 100 yards, throw for well over 200 yards and a few touchdowns because Seattle's defense isn't very good. It looks like maybe he's losing a key member in Adams from their secondary. But if I'm looking overall and I just have one to answer, I can't say Joe Burrow. I can't say Matthew Stafford. It's got to be Trey Lance. There's way too many question marks still surrounding him after a bad week one.
While I understand that Trey Lance is far from the most solidified of this group, he had the least concerning performance of this group. If I would have put Joe Burrow in that reign, if I would have put Stafford in that reign, I'm telling you, it would have not looked all that. No, it wouldn't. It would have not looked all that much different.
I saw the future already. Let's be honest. I did it. I played it on Madden simulation. Wins on both. So there you go.
I mean, if that's how you're picking games, that would start to make a little bit more sense. Certainly appears like the level you're bringing into it. At the end of the day, Matthew Stafford last season led the NFL in interceptions with 17 picks. Stafford throwing 3 picks, while concerning, isn't the end-all be-all. He did it last year. Burrow, though, that was concerning. And they still should have won the football game, but that's because the Steelers are not all that great. 5 turnovers? 4 picks? 4 interceptions. While I know the Steelers are great, here's the big thing right now, okay? If I had asked you, do you think the Rams are going to make the playoffs? You probably still tell me yes. If I actually, if the Niners are going to make the playoffs, well, you didn't think they were going to make it before the season. I did, so I would at least tell you yes. But for Cincinnati, I do not think they're going to win their division, and we know the AFC is loaded. There's only 3 wild card spots available. if you believe the Ravens are going to win this division, which I still cannot tell through your offseason analysis who you think is going to win this division, mm-hmm. I think you've middled it and have a piece of all four football teams.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I don't think Cincinnati's going to win their division, which is why I think they can find themselves on the ropes ultimately here, Donnie, because what Joe Burrow put forward, if we're going to chalk it, oh, it's the appendectomy. Well, that's not great. T. Higgins left with a concussion. That's not great. Oh, and also maybe the most concerning thing, 7 sacks. I thought they were supposed to fix the offensive line. Doesn't look like that was the case.
Yeah, Joey Sacks out here. That is the biggest issue here. It's not the interceptions. It's not a little bit rusty. It's not that you lost opening day at home to the Pittsburgh Steelers when you probably should have rolled that football team. It's the matter of you got to be healthy at the end of the season. And also, this isn't coming from, hey, man, Joe Burrow all through high school, college, and the pros, he's never been injured. Oh, yes, he has. And the more hits you take as a quarterback, the more rattled you get in the pocket. So I understand your point of reference on Joe Burrow because you have to, you know, if your team's going to make the playoffs, you got to be there for him all 17 games. Am I anticipating an injury for Burrow? No, I'm not. But you can't get hit that many times. I just look at it as I need to see it here with Trey Lance. We know how explosive he can be with his legs and has a great arm. But until I see it in play, I look at two guys that, again, not veteran presences here, specifically with Burrow, but I expect Stafford to bounce back. I saw him win a Super Bowl. I know his pedigree and the coaching staff that is around him. Same thing with Joe Burrow. I like what he brings to the table. The coaching staff is wonderful around Trey Lance. Just haven't seen it yet. And maybe it's this week, Kevin. How about throwing for 275, running for 80 yards, a blowout victory over Seattle? Then I'll maybe start believing here in Trey Lance and the 49ers.
One thing I will say about these quarterbacks and why I am not going to come on here, though, and say the sky has fallen for any of the three. Trey Lance plays Seattle, Cincinnati plays Dallas, and Matthew Stafford gets to host the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. If we run this back next week, who had the most concerning week two performance, and any of these three are repeat appearers, they're the runaway answer. None of these three quarterbacks should be talked about in this fashion next week. Because not only are those, look, you're talking about touchdown favorites, a lot of them. But defensively, those are vulnerable defenses that you should be able to take advantage of between Atlanta, Dallas, and Seattle. Certainly, we will see who answers the bell. We will see who falls short. Now, coming up in hour number two, we're going to be able to get you a lengthier baseball preview than recent time has provided. So I'm not going to make Donnie give out his MLB play of the day. Why would we ever jump the gun like that? So coming up next is KW's, old K-Dubs, soccer play of the day. We've been in the lab cooking this up, and it's coming your way after this quick break here on Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
KW soccer play of the day. It's what the people have been waiting for. We have Champions League action. And there, it's going to start, by the way, before 1 p.m. Eastern time. And I'll be looking at the early portion of the slate. I was curious, though, DRS. I mean, did you as well, you know, look over a lot of these Champions League lines? I imagine you might have a lengthy card today over in Champions League action.
Yeah, I was going to dip my toes in the water for Olympiacos, but I decided to stay away at this point now. So that's where I was leaning. How are they doing, by the way, in Euro soccer?
Listen, the Olympiacos is hanging in, I think, but I'm not sure if they're going to make today's card all in all. We're actually going to look, though, for some goals. It's 12:45 Eastern game between Inter and Victoria Pilsen. And by the way, I made sure to do my research and to know that I was saying Victoria Pilsen correctly, because usually I drop the ball on that. Victoria Pilsen comes over from the Czech League and is wildly outmatched. In their first game in group play, they allowed 5 goals to Barcelona on 20 shots, 11 of those on target. Now, to Pilsen's credit, they actually put up 8 shots of their own. The lone that went on target, they did find a goal. 5-1 was the final scoreline in that game. Now they go up against Inter. While at home, they are still wildly outmatched. And Inter has actually been one of the highest scoring teams in Serie A this season, scoring 12 goals of their own and conceding 8, an average of 3.3 goals per match. And we're looking for 3 goals here in this game. And what's also important is the fact that goal differential is a massive, massive deal when you are dealing with the group stage. So there is no, like we talk about in college football, oh, this team's up 20, big game next week, they're going to, you know, put it in stop and everything's going to pause. No. Inter, who's going to likely have to challenge Barca for the second spot in this group, needs to pour it on Victoria Pilsen if possible. They have an opportunity as a minus 240 favorite to go over this total by themselves. But here's the deal. Both teams have scores minus 118. Don't sleep on Pilsen grabbing a goal. 3-1 final intern. Hour 2 is next.
Apartment people, my name is Dave, and I bring you good news. From Champion, River Park of Dublin. It's a brand new community now open and leasing. I've been to it. It's kitchen clean. And they've got a new enticement. You get 2 months free when you sign a 12-month or longer lease and you move in by the beginning of October. Everything's new. New pool, new fitness center, free Starbucks coffee, EV charging stations, parking, garage, River Park of Dublin. Now make the move, literally. LiveWithChampion.com. Schedule a tour. LiveWithChampion.com.